And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3629 of the Survival Podcast. And I bet you most of you know what today's topic is already. Many of you guys actually contributed to selecting the thumbnail for this episode. And this episode was chosen against another episode for today very early this morning on a poll that I did on X. So I let people on Noster and on Telegram choose the artwork. And I let people on X choose the subject. If some Noster dev would do a nip so that polls were universal on Noster and all clients could have them, I would love that, but it hasn't happened yet. When people say, why don't you do it? Because I don't code, bro. That's not my thing. I'm not a coder. Anyway, we are going to talk about eggs as the real red pill, as in the Matrix. And this is a true co-created show, which are some of my favorite. When the audience and I co-create a show. From the very genesis of it all the way through, before it starts, I guess, right up to like when we go live, those are some of the best shows. So this show came to be, last week I did a couple shows on getting out of the Matrix. First, to get out of the Matrix, and then to be in the Matrix, but not of it, acknowledging that we can't fully disconnect from the Matrix because it literally coexists with us here on Earth. And during one of those two episodes, somehow, somewhere, I think it was in live chat, I don't think it was a comment, somebody said something about eggs being the true red pill. That sparked some further discussion, and voila, a week later, here we are doing a show called Eggs, the Real Red Pill. Now, when I first heard that, my thought was, well, maybe, but is it just me and my marketer brain going, you know what? You know what? That'll get people to show up. Because I don't like to do titles just to get people to show up. I don't like being clickbaity. And if I'm going to be clickbaity at all, then I want it to be like clickbait, but then there's actually real food on the hook, right? Like it actually delivers on what it promises. So I started thinking about it. And here's the intro that I came up today in conjunction with ChatGPT. And I think when you hear this, it'll give you a good intro for what we're going to be talking about today. Today, we dive into a topic that starts simple but quickly becomes a full-blown red pill moment, raising chickens and producing your own eggs. At first, it seems like an innocent step towards self-sufficiency. Get a few birds, collect some eggs, enjoy better food. But before you know it, you're staring straight into the cracks of the system. You realize grocery store eggs are garbage. Regulations exist just to control you. And suddenly you're bartering with your neighbors, dodging stupid local ordinances and questioning everything you thought you knew about food, supply chains, and independence. We break down why eggs are the perfect entry point into the counter economy, how even the casual backyard flock exposes flaws in the industrial food model, and why once you take this step, there is no going back. If you've ever wondered how a dozen eggs could shake someone out of the Matrix, stick around. Because this is where the real wake-up begins. And as I formulated this and thought about it and built my outline today, I realized that like this subject, whoever actually said it first, and I just don't remember who it was, and if you're here today in the live and you're in the live chat, tell us who you are, because I'd love to give credit for it. But it was one of those things caught out of my one good eye in a couple seconds, and like that's good. And as I started to peel this onion, right, or peel this egg, I realized something. That dude, whoever said that, or gal, I don't remember again who it was onto something. When you start producing your own food at any level, no matter what form that food comes in, you're going to run into a bunch of things. But when you do it with animals, you're going to run into more things. We generally, as people, value the product of animals higher than we value the product of vegetation. We might say we don't, but that's just because we want to sound like we're conforming to the Matrix, right? A vegan diet or a plant-based diet or whatever. You know, America is on a plant-based diet. Right now, we are on a plant-based diet in that about 65 to 75% of the calories that people take in right now on average in America are plant-based calories. primarily from seed oils and junk grains and things like that. But the American public is already on a plant-based diet. If you actually mean plant-based, when they say plant-based, what they're trying to say is plants only, right? Or like 95% plants. If you're 51% or more of your calories in a diet on one class of food, that's what your diet is based on. And it's way beyond that for the average person. I'm not talking about people on diets. I'm not talking about dedicated vegans. I'm talking about all the fat-ass people waddling around everywhere, bumping into us because they can't fit through the lanes at the grocery store while they're getting their bag of Cheetos. That is a plant-based diet. Josh says he just wants a based diet. That sounds pretty good. But in the end, when we take away and strip away all the stuff, when you tell somebody, hey, man, I've got some carrots from my garden, you want them? They might say yes, but they get a lot more excited about an egg. I'm just telling you from working with people, et cetera. And when you look at what people actually sell, and not at a farmer's market, people that sell like backyard production and have people come to their house to pick up a product, they'll do it for eggs before they're going to do it for lettuce. So people value this. And I think that means that what happens is you get this network effect once you become the egg person. And you also then run into something else. No matter what the HOA blue hairs or the local codes say, growing vegetables in a backyard is a pretty hard thing to prevent. It can be done in so many ways that nobody sees. People start bringing living creatures into places where people aren't used to seeing them. And apparently it's okay for like somebody to feed birds and have like 1,000 blackbirds shit all over your car. But a couple chickens walking around in the backyard might result in a call to the HOA board or to the department of making you sad. So then it starts to open up this whole edge of the matrix. That's what we're going to talk about today. And it does lead people down some very interesting walks. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is being shown the matrix through the simple act of keeping a few birds and collecting the eggs that fall out of their rear ends. With that, before we get into it, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Another living creature that many of you have in your homes and on your homesteads is the puppy, the canine, the dog, man's best friend. Who is man's best friend right up until he eats your shoes, eats your remote control, jumps on your friends and doesn't listen, or eats your chicken that you work so hard to grow up, etc.? How about you make that all stop? How about you turn your dog into a good citizen of the home and the homestead? You can learn how to do that at canineacademy.us. It'd be great if you used my links for that, but it's not absolutely mandatory. I just don't get credit for it. Joel and I have a different agreement than I do with any of my other sponsors. He pays me only based on referrals. I did that kind of as a deal with him to help him get canineacademy.us off the ground. It is a great resource. You can learn the three C's that lead to the fourth C. What does that all that mean? I don't know. You're going to have to take a course, find out. Check it out at canineacademy.us and try the problem solving library to learn some basics. It's basically a free course to learn how Joel teaches you to teach and train your dog. Next, though, today is Anton's Land of Biltong. I didn't eat breakfast today. That's pretty normal for me when I go live by noon to not have eaten yet. But I did look at my bag of Biltong that came in this week's shipment. Notice I said bag. I get actually four bags from Anton every 2 weeks. Two bags of Drew War sausages, one bag of Angus Biltong, and one bag of Wagyu Biltong. I have one bag, and I got my bag on Monday, and it's only Tuesday. Yeah. Well, wait, no. I got it last week, I think. I don't know, but I ate a bunch of it. I'm saving my last bag because I don't think I have a shipment coming this week. And if you try Anton's Biltong, you'll know why. AntonsLandOfBiltong.com is where to get yours. All right. And like I said, you know, people really do value animal product over vegetative product in general. I know some of you don't, but you're the exception, not the rule. So let's start talking about one of the easiest places to get started as a homesteader and as producing some of your own food and making a significant impact on your diet. I want to start off with just a little bit about why chickens are so perfect for this discussion. And it's because almost everybody eats eggs. There's almost no one who doesn't eat eggs in one form or another, even if people are not big, you know, eggs every morning for breakfast type people. People that fry food use egg wash to roll the product in. People that cook, cakes and breads and stuff, a lot of times use eggs in their recipes. So it's just kind of one of the most universal foods, and it's why it's one of the more heavily subsidized foods in America. You can live on eggs if you have to. I don't recommend it, okay, especially store-bought soy-based eggs, but you can live on eggs if you have to. An egg is complete nutrition for a human being, and therefore it's one of those things that once you take control of it into your own homestead, even if it's a small property, you can have a significant impact on your dietary health. And when you start talking to people and networking with, oh, wait, you know what? Six birds really do produce more eggs than my family uses. I have an extra dozen or two dozen eggs a week that I can sell. And you go to, you know, if you start trying to sell it on Craigslist or something, especially in a place where a lot of people do it, you might have a real hard time finding buyers. But if you just go to your office or your shop or wherever you work and tell all the people you're working with, hey, man, I produce eggs at home for my chickens. Is anybody interested in buying some for $4, $5, $6 a dozen? You're probably going to have enough people that want it regularly. You're never going to have enough. And you're going to learn two things. One, it's a great networking tool. And two, you're probably not going to get rich doing it. No matter how much you scale up, you're still going to be limited. It's not a high profit item, but it is a valued item that builds networks. And so I want you to think about it. Ooh, Hey Hey Alabama says an egg is a seed. A seed contains everything necessary for life. An egg contains everything necessary to make a chicken. So it contains everything necessary to make a human to a large degree as well. I like that, Hey Hey. Anyway, let's start off with why we're even in this discussion so much right now, and that's the eggpocalypse, right? Pricing. So eggs have typically been, over the last 10 years, because if we go back more than 10 years, inflation as a general thing corrupts the number. I remember buying jumbo large eggs. It doesn't seem that long ago, but it had to be because before I was keeping my own birds, for like 80 to 90 cents a dozen. But when I looked at the average price nationwide, which includes really expensive areas, really cheap areas, average it out, it's $1.50 to $2 a dozen. That's how much eggs have typically cost if we get rid of a couple spikes, one by COVID, one by right now, and some other bird flu bullshit where they killed the birds. On that, as we're talking about pricing today, I am completely aware of why there's a shortage of eggs today. It has nothing to do with any actual needs whatsoever. It is the government paying producers to murder chickens that do not need to be killed because one or two pop positive on a freaking test. Do you know what? Doesn't matter. All that matters is it can happen. That's all. It doesn't matter why. It will happen again, and it will probably be a different reason. It will be because somebody set fire to a bunch of giant hatcheries or who knows what, but it will happen again. The point is that prices fluctuate and nobody really values the underlying value of a home-produced egg until they have to pay the real price of eggs in the store because reality sets in. And part of that real price is, you know, I said it's $1.50 to $2 a dozen average. Well, that means that the real average price is $2.50 to $3 a dozen. That's the best estimate I can do. Because what I'm estimating is, well, what's the subsidy on eggs? Well, getting the answer to what is the subsidy on the eggs themselves is pretty easy. But much like our show on taxation yesterday, you can't use that number. Do you know why you can't use that number? Because the egg producer, when we're talking about regular old, like, you know, Kroger brand eggs or whatever, they're not buying any kind of super badass feed or anything. They're buying generic feed by the metric shit ton, and they're buying it as close to the production as possible because they're buying it by the metric shit ton they can. They have semi-trucks coming in to these laying houses bringing this feed in weekly. And so what is that feed mostly made of? Corn and soy. So you actually have to factor in the subsidy that went to the farmer that grew the corn and the farmer that grew the soy into the egg, because those are necessary ingredients, especially for commercial egg. So when we look now at our prices being about $5 a dozen national average, I know you see pictures of people saying it's $10. Those pictures are not helping us. Don't be the person that shares those pictures. Those pictures are stupid. Inevitably, it's like Oregon or Washington State, and it's like a super high quality organic free range egg or something. National average price is about $5, which is a much higher price than we're accustomed to. That's why people notice it. If they went up a quarter, no one would even really care, except the old people on Social Security that complain about every price increase, even if it's meaningless. I know you think I'm being heartless right now. One of my first real jobs, my second actual job after I worked for Muskrat at the junkyard, I worked as a stock boy in a grocery store. And I, you know, worked through the whole store. It's like a part-time guy. Whatever you need to get done, go do this. And I used to work in the dairy a lot, restocking the milk, and I had to change the prices. And the milk might go up like a penny. And every old person that walked through there yelled at me like I did it. And I started going to work with a pocket full of pennies. And whenever they would yell at me, I'd hand them a penny. And then my boss got really mad about that. Anyway, back to the pricing. So $5 a dozen now, $1.50 a dozen on average in the past. What's my cost to produce eggs? Now, I'm basing my cost on $14 a bag of feed. If that seems low for you, you know, all I can say is you probably can do about that good if you really look and you're willing to do what I do, which is I drive 90 miles round trip to get it. But it's just what I do to get it at that price. I buy 25 bags or more at a go. And my feed is no soy, no corn, no GMO. So I'm feeding a premium feed. The average chicken uses about 0.25 to 0.35 pounds of feed a day for layers. That's what commercial operations use. Based on that cost, I can produce eggs for $1.41 a dozen, which means so can you. And that's not doing anything. That's not free ranging. That's not black soldier fly larva. That's not growing them some of my own food. That's not sprouting them some sunflower seeds and shit like that. That's just buying feed and feeding them, which means when I say, you know, at least 25% of my birds' diet, since they're free range, and you can do this with tractoring, you can do it with paddocks, you can do it with electronet, however you want to do it. If you get them even 25% of your diet, you can drive your cost based on $15 a bag. And this counts the feed debt and only two laying cycles for laying birds. At the average of 275 eggs a year, because the number is 250 to 300, so I split it right in the middle. My estimated cost at 25% utilization off the land is $1.06 a dozen. The store-bought eggs right now cost 366% more than it cost me to produce eggs. And I produce duck eggs, which sell at a premium. Like, if you could find them, they're $10 to $12 a dozen in a store. I produce them for no more money than my chickens, the same money. And so that tells you that it can be done. Double the number, I don't care. Double the number to $2 a dozen, you're still way ahead. Plus, you're eating a better quality food. I do want to talk a little bit, though, before we go on about, you know, I called the eggs in the store junk eggs. That is a comparative terminology. Compared to what I produce, I do feel that the eggs you buy from Kroger or Albertsons or whatever are junk. Do I actually think they're bad for you? No, with parentheses, but. And the problem with these eggs is less that they're commercial, fed, live in a house, whatever, and don't get outside. And more that the base feed that they're getting is soy-based for the protein content. And that soy is full of isoflavin, so you're eating an estrogen bomb. So some people, in taking those estrogens, it doesn't really do anything to them. They're not very sensitive to it. Some people are extremely sensitive to it. And I believe most of us lie in the middle where it's doing negative things to our biology over time, but it's so insignificant on a daily basis we don't see it. But I would never tell somebody, oh, you made eggs for breakfast? I'm not eating them because they came from the store. I'm not that guy, but I'm not going to eat them every day. And I eat eggs probably 5 to 6 times a week, one form or another in our home. And I wouldn't do that with store-bought eggs unless I had no other choice and I didn't have a sensitivity. So let's not overplay that. But there is an aha moment of chicken ownership. And that's once you produce eggs, you see how simple food production should be. Like, you go to the store and then you go to the back of the store into the refrigerator case, and all the eggs are generally in those nasty styrofoam things, and you have to stand in line, and you know that that egg probably was laid by a chicken a couple thousand miles away from you in a giant chicken house, and it's never seen the sun. And then that egg had to be collected, inspected, irradiated, put in that styrofoam thing, packed in a case, put on a truck, sent across the country, went to a warehouse. The warehouse distributed it to the retail outlet. The retail outlet had a stock boy go in the back and get it. And you fed your chickens. They grew up. You went to the coop one day after you got your first chickens. And everybody that's ever done chickens remembers this day. You went to the coop. You opened it up. The chickens came out, or they went into their little yard or whatever it is you have for them. And you looked in the coop and you looked in the laying box, and there it was, the first egg. And usually even if you have four or six birds, your first, your early girl that goes first lays that egg. And there's one egg the first time that first group of birds ever lays an egg. Seldom do you get two on day one. And then they start coming, like you get two and you get three, and you get about one per bird per day during the laying peak. And all of a sudden you got eggs erupting like a volcano out of chickens' asses. But that first egg, when you pick it up and you look at it and you walk into your house with it and you think, I'm going to make breakfast with this egg. There's a click. Wait a minute. All my life, especially people that like didn't grow up like me, didn't have homesteading grandparents, whatever, like all my life, eggs were a factory food. Even if they're one of the better quality factory foods, and I do believe they are. But all my life, eggs were a factory food. Now there's just literally a egg factory, natural style, right outside of my yard. And when I go out in the evening and have a beer or a tea or something like that on my back porch, I have an entertainment system. I watch my little flock do flock things. And there's this moment where you're like, wait a minute. This is actually the way things should be. This is actually a human endeavor. That's like the first crack in the matrix that you get by keeping chickens, to me. Then you run into something, either at that moment, before that moment, somewhere along your walk, you're going to realize that, like, even if it doesn't affect you, your first thought as a new chicken keeper is going to be, I'm going to get some chickens. This is going to be great. But if you don't have any neighbors that have chickens, then you get a thought in the back of your head. Can I keep chickens here? Am I allowed to? If it pleases the crown, might I please keep a bird in my backyard? Right? And you either find there is an obstruction to that. There's a HOA rule. There's a city ordinance. There's a county ordinance. Right? Or there isn't one, but when you checked, you found out, like, man, it's a good thing I live where I do, because if I live one town over, I couldn't do this. Or you find out, well, I can have chickens, but I can't have a rooster. And you're like, I'm okay with that, but really? I can't have a rooster because somebody's going to be offended that the rooster crows a couple times a day or something like that? Like, I can't have a rooster. Oh, I can have chickens, but I can only have four? Or, oh, I can have chickens, but they actually tell me how big my coop can be and how big it has to be. You'll run into something. Either directly affecting you or adjacent to you. You'll get involved in a chicken community, right? Like backyardchickens.com, where they have teacup chickens that they treat like pets or whatever. And you'll see somebody come in and be very distraught. Like, you didn't even run into anything directly, and you see this other person like, I can't have chickens. Or the government came and took my chickens away. This is another crack. This is the matrix starts to show itself. You start to realize there's zoning laws, HOA bans, and the shock of government interference in something as simple as backyard food. Your government tells you all the time, by the way, you should be prepared. You should take responsibility for yourself. Now, their actions do not dictate that. But if you go look on, like, the FEMA website and all, like, there's all this talk about local food production and minorities getting involved in agriculture and how important it is and feed the country and eat the best quality food you can and local is better. And then the minute you try to do it, the very entities that are telling you how good it is and how important it is are in the way. There's a glitch in the matrix. The black cat went by twice. What's going on? Well, what it really means is do what we say. That's the number one overriding rule of the matrix. If you do as you're told, you'll be comfortable in your pod. right? You know the whole Klaus Schwab thing? You will eat the bugs and you will live in the pod. Well, how about the chicken eats the bugs and the chicken lives in the pod and the chicken gives you the eggs and you eat the eggs? You start to reverse that mentality of compliance. As soon as you're told you cannot do something that you personally legitimately want to do, and when you analyze it as a basic reasoning, rational human being, and you say to yourself, there's literally no reason that I should not be able to do this thing, then you start to question authority. See, the thing about compliance is, as long as you'd have done the compliant thing anyway, and as long as you never question what the compliance requires of you, you just feel like, well, I don't understand what everybody's problem is. Nobody bothers me. That's because your natural conditioning, your natural training in this system led you to a lifestyle that didn't bump against the edge. The first time you bump against the edge, just chickens are a great way to do it. All of a sudden you're like, well, wait a minute. What else can't I do that I should be able to do? What else can't my neighbors do that they should be able to do even if I don't want to do it? You start to realize you grew up hearing freedom, freedom, freedom. I can't own a fucking bird in my backyard, right? Or I can't sell eggs because there's some licensing bullshit for that where I live or something. You might find that's not the case for you, but you see it for somebody else. You start hearing words that make no sense, like it's not safe to eat your backyard egg because it hasn't been properly irradiated to make sure that it's safe. You say, what? Well, my grandma and my great-grandma didn't die. Oh, your eggs must be refrigerated from the time you pick them up or they'll go bad. If they're out of the refrigerator for more than 3 hours, throw them away. And you say, really? Hold on a second. What was the temperature of the egg when it came out of the chicken's ass? Right? You start to see all these inconsistencies, all these glitches in the matrix between what it says and what it does. It leads you to the whole systems thinking thing, right? The purpose of the system is what it does, not what it says it does. Stafford Beer, you run right into that with this. You start like, hey, I do have a rooster. I do have enough freedom for that. And they tell me I have to refrigerate my eggs. But then you're like, well, I only have like 4 chickens and I want to save up like 20 eggs and hatch chickens and give them to other people and spread the chicken addiction. And so you go to your little chicken farm and you say, how do I start all my eggs at the same time? And they say, well, just take your eggs and sit them on your counter at room temperature. They won't start to develop. Because this is what a mother hen does. You just sit your eggs there until you have as many as you want. You put them all in the incubator on the same day. They'll all hatch within about 12 hours of each other. You go, whoa. I thought I was supposed to throw my egg away if it was out of the refrigerator for more than a few hours. How does an egg that went bad turn into a chicken? And the answer is, of course, it can't. It can't be a thing. It's all bullshit. And so you start seeing all the steaming piles of bullshit. And you realize, wait a minute, something's not right. Again, the matrix cracks. Then the quality realization. Like I said, the eggs that you buy from Albertsons or Kroger or Winn-Dixie or wherever the hell they have, Publix or I don't know, whatever you have for a chain store where you are, they're not poisonous. They're not terrible. Again, I do think most commercial eggs are way too high in estrogens. They're phytoestrogens. Yeah, that means they're estrogens. Okay. But when you crack that first egg you got, that little gem, and you look at the yolk, you go, whoa, what the hell? Look how golden that is. What? And then if you start, you know, like when you're in that transition where you're still buying eggs and you've just started laying and you crack two in a bowl together, you look at them and go, Something's not right with this commercial product. And then you just go look at that simple system in your backyard, no matter what it is. Coop and run, free range, tractored system, electronet, mobile coop, whatever it is. You just look at it and go, oh, I get it. I see why. My birds live on feed, yes. They also eat bugs and weed seeds. And they have this incredibly varied diet, and they're out running around, and they're being a chicken, and they're getting fresh air and sunlight and fresh water, and they're not, you know, standing in this cage that the only reason they're not standing in their shit is it falls through the cage and their feet never touch the ground. And so it makes sense. And then you realize, wait a minute. So I'm producing a product that if I go buy it in the store right now, costs me 300 to 400% more than doing it this way. And look at the quality of my product and look at their product. And when somebody at work says to you, well, yeah, I can buy your eggs, but why are they $6 a dozen? You just take a picture on your phone and you show it to them and say, this is my egg sitting next to an egg from Kroger. Go buy the fucking Kroger eggs. I'll sell them to Dan. Whoa, wait a minute. You have this understanding that your simple method produces a product that's not just a little better. It's 3, 4, 5 times as good. And it costs less and it's simpler and it brings more to your life and it expands your network. That quality realization is another crack. We're starting to shatter the entire matrix, at least the mental matrix that we're imprisoned in, with a fucking egg. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And then you end up with that first step into barter and parallel economies. You talk to your neighbor. You really are technically, there's so many of you guys I know doing this right now. You are technically not supposed to have chickens on your property. And you got that one neighbor, and he's a cool guy, but he's kind of like Wilson from Home Improvement over the fence once in a while looking at things. And Wilson, your neighbor, we'll just call him Wilson, right? I've got a pop culture reference for everything. I really do. It's just all my pop culture references are like 15 years or more old. So Wilson looks over the fence one day, and he says, hi, neighbor. You seen the price of eggs lately? And you say, well, how about a dozen free eggs? And he says, well, where are you going to get them? Well, I've got home-laid eggs here. You know what you just bought? Wilson's silence. He's not going to call the department of me. He's the guy looking around. He might see your little setup, and he realizes it's been there for a while. And it ain't never cost him no problems. And now he's looking at eggs and he goes and cooks them and they're delicious. Wilson shuts his mouth. Now, I know people personally. I know people locally doing just that. I know one dude, he built this thing. It looks like this rock fixture just on the front of his house. And it's got caging across the top of it. And the birds actually live inside his home. Now, they have their own little area. It's all perfectly sanitary. It doesn't smell, stink, whatever. They can also go out in that thing anytime they want to, and it just looks like a facaded rock wall in the front of his house. But you know what? A lot of neighbors know about it, and their little kids come get treasure. They pull the eggs out, and they can just take what they want. And he just makes sure he has enough eggs for their household, and the kids can have all the eggs they want other than the ones he takes for himself. No trouble. And where he lives, he's not supposed to have chickens, and no one gives two shits. These are different ways to get into the parallel economy. Notice in neither one of those situations is the person taking money in. They're just purchasing the silence of the neighbor. Now, you could be selling to your neighbor maybe a little cheaper than you sell to Dan at work, but you might just find that's a way to go. And then you find reciprocity. Like when you start – you know, decent people, when you do something for them, they try to do something back. And so now you're in a barter situation. Or you go to work and Dan or Bill or whoever's bitching about how much eggs cost. I thought the orange man was going to make them more affordable. Well, Dan, did you ever think about the fact that it takes 22 to 24 weeks for a chicken to lay an egg? And if we just murdered like a million chickens, it's going to take that long for the supply to get rebalanced? And they're probably going to look at you like you have a lizard crawling out of your ear and go, how do you know that? Well, I keep chickens. Do you want some eggs? My eggs are $5 a dozen. Well, they're $5 at the store. Yeah, but, you know, you can buy the store-bought egg. You can buy my egg for the same price. They're produced, you know, down the road at my house. And if he says no, then you say, like I said, Dan, you don't want them, I'll sell them to Bill. Bill, you don't want them, I'll sell them to Tom. I only got enough to sell a dozen or two a week. So I don't really care who doesn't buy. I care who does. Most powerful word in sales in marketing is what, ladies and gentlemen? I've been teaching you that for 16 plus years. Be 17 years in June. No. The most powerful word you have when you are making a deal is no. Well, will you give me a discount? No. Not, well, here's why I can't. Not I have more than that into it. All that's bullshit people use, like when they're selling a car. There's a dude, my next door neighbor right now, selling a pickup truck. Blue book value on it's about $4,000. And it's okay for that, right? I won't get into model or whatever. He wants $5,500 for it. And if you say, well, I'll give you $4,000, I got more than that into it. Don't nobody give a fuck what you got into it. The response when the number is lower than you're willing to sell something for is simply no. That's it. That is a way more powerful response than you trying to explain it. When I start explaining it to you, you think we're negotiating the price further to your direction. When I tell you no, then you know we're not. Go buy your eggs from Kroger. I don't care. I'll feed them. I'll tell a person, like, people try to Jew us down on our pricing on like duck eggs. I'll feed them to the dog before I cut the price. They're worth more money. They're worth more money as dog's food than selling them to you at $6 a dozen. I'm sorry. They are. That's what I'm going to do at that point. Learn to say no. But all of a sudden now you're into this barter and parallel economy. And that leads you into the backyard gray market. You're going to realize that people selling eggs are usually going to do it off the books for because of dumb restrictions. There's going to be something that makes you just decide, I'm only selling to friends and family. I'm going to treat this like I'm dealing drugs, even though I'm selling eggs. And I am going to just do this under the table. And then you're going to realize, I'm a tax criminal. I'm supposed to report this, but I'm not reporting that I make an extra $40 a month selling eggs to Dan at work. I'm not doing it. Oh, wait a minute. This feels kind of good. And you start asking yourself, how many other things out there are like this because of stupid restrictions and interference by the state? And the matrix cracks just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Then you look at things like supply chain and feed costs as a wake-up call. Home producers realize market manipulation firsthand. You know for a fact that there is no good reason for a mass-produced egg to cost the price that a home producer sells their eggs for. Because there is, let's be honest about something here. One thing mass production does is drive unit production costs down. You're not going to buy your feed for what they're paying. I'm telling you, what they're paying for their feed is a hell of a lot less than you are. I bet you if you factored it into a 50 pounds to the bag cost, I bet you your average commercial laying house right now is paying about $5 per 50 pounds. I don't know that, but I'm just looking at, like, if I'm that person, I'm just probably buying milled raw grain and doing my own mix. That some guy who's getting paid barely over minimum wage is going to take care of mixing for me by just pulling two different chutes that pull everything together. They're probably paying about $5 to 50 pounds. Even if it's seven, it's still half of what I'm paying. And I'm going to it direct to a mill. And the price I'm paying is because I'm going direct to a mill. It's not my quantity. Yes, I'll buy 25 bags at a time. But if I went up there and bought one bag, they'll sell it to me for the same price. That's just how much it costs. So if me, a schmo walking in off the street, can buy a premium soy-free, corn-free, no GMO product for $14 a bag, what do you think like a giant, like huge consortium is paying for their feed? A lot less. So you start to realize this whole thing, even with these chickens being killed, there has to be a whole bunch of bullshit in this distribution chain. I'm not saying that you're being price gouged by the producer, and I'm not saying you're being price gouged by the store that sells it to you. I'm saying the system as a whole is creating a price gouging opportunity primarily through regulation and control and the back end subsidy that you don't see the cost of. And once you see that, you start to say, well, wait a minute, that's a thread. And what happens when we see a thread? We have this urge to pull the thread And like, oh, wait, the whole tapestry's coming apart now. Oh, look, the thread doesn't end. It's the one, it goes through everything. Holy shit. And you start to see the edges of the matrix now. It's not just cracks letting light in. Now we're seeing the whole thing. Then we get into the gateway drug thing. Now we've done all this. Now we've done something amazing to people, and I know that once you've done it for a while, you forget the feeling of that first egg. That first egg, if especially, like, I actually never got the real experience of that. I kind of wish I did. You know, I grew up, I had grandparents that kept chickens, I had neighbors that kept chickens. So there was part of me, but then I got disconnected, right? Like, I, from the time I joined the Army until we moved here, in Texas, this place in Texas, I didn't have birds ever. I had gardens. I had all kinds of stuff that was producing food for me. But even in Arkansas, just the place and the way things were, I decided I didn't want to get birds there. So it had been a long time for me, but I remember how that felt. I went out there and that little red pullet laid that little egg, and I realized I'd spent 6 months taking care of these animals. And for that 6 months, I got nothing in return other than the chicken entertainment, you know, center, you know, it's like an entertainment center, like for adults, you watch the chickens play, right? That's all I had gotten. I hadn't gotten any production. And there it was, that first egg. It's a big deal. It's like, wait a minute, this is like, and then you realize, like, you know what? I grow tomatoes and I grow peppers and I grow a lot of it. And the nutrition in this one freaking egg is a basket of peppers and tomatoes. It's a basket of it to get the same amount of nutrition for my body from those things. And now this isn't work anymore. This isn't hard anymore. This is easy now. Oh, you put the feed out, put the water out, open the door, let the chickens out. At night, close the door. Hell, I can go online and buy a door that opens itself and closes itself. All I got to do is make sure they have feed. I can buy an automated feeder that I only got to feed once, fill it once a week or once a month. Buy an automated waterer, plumb it into a line, and I don't have to even worry about that anymore. Just clean it out once a week or once a month to make sure they don't get sick. Hold it, wait, I get this incredibly nutritiously dense thing. And once I get to the point of production, it's actually really easy. Next thing you know what you're doing? You're buying incubators. You're getting a rooster if you don't already have one. You have some eggs. You go, wait, whoa, 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 wait a minute. So the chicken lays an egg. I hatch the egg. I get another chicken. Then I take the roosters, and they're not the best meat birds if they're dedicated layers, but they're okay. And I've got some food. I got some meat. And now I have these new hens. Well, when the old hens are too old, I can replace these birds when they go in to start declining in egg production. Those are all full adult birds. They're great stewing birds. And all of a sudden, like, you're producing, without really trying, you're producing the most dense, nutritionally dense food you can other than, like, red meat. That's about the only thing you can do that's more nutritionally dense than chicken is some form of red meat. So then you start saying, well, maybe I can produce red meat. Or maybe I get some rabbits. Or hell, all those people I talked to about buying chicken eggs, a few of them said they wanted quail's eggs. And that's, you know, you're keeping quail. And then you're like, wait a minute, this chicken shits in this bedding. And when I pile this bedding up, it breaks down into this compost stuff. And when I put it in my garden, all that work I was doing to grow my peppers and tomatoes and onions and stuff, it just got easier. And now all of a sudden you were a full-on homesteader because you started with an egg. It is the number one gateway drug for homesteaders. It's not the only one. Not everybody starts with chickens. But I would say 60, 70% of people that go full bore with homesteading, it was the chicken that opened the gate of that gateway. Then we're going to look at that edge of the matrix we started starting to see. Because of all these impacts, you start looking. You stop relying on the system for one thing. Most Americans, not everybody, but most Americans shop weekly or biweekly at the grocery store. And most Americans, every time they go to the grocery store for more than like the one or two items your wife called you for on the way home, Like, honey, can you stop at the store and pick up these three things? If it ain't that, if you're actually going to the store, at some point you go buy the egg case, you pick the eggs up, you put them in the cart. Which means every single week, once the production starts, you're like, I don't need that anymore. And this leads you to wonder, what else could I break this connection from? What else could I do? You start realizing, you know, my garden produces all this produce. But in the winter, I have to buy it because I can't grow it. Next thing you know, you're like, well, let's see. What do I miss the most? Well, like if you like salads, then like the lettuces, the arugulas, all those leaf vegetables and things like fresh basil and all, what you can do with a salad with that is pretty badass. And you're like, that's actually really expensive. You start doing the math and you go, per pound, it costs more than the freaking eggs. It costs as much as meat. It's nuts. What's going on? And you figure out, well, you know what? I could set up this little bitty, you know, little stand about 4 foot tall, three little shelves, some cheap lights in it. And next thing you know, you're growing, at least in the winter, your salad vegetables with like hydroponics indoors. Wow. Now you're not buying that. And you're not going to get rich doing this, but what you can really do is change your wealth quotient. How much of your salary can you save toward your future on a weekly and monthly basis to invest in things like boring ass mutual funds or ETFs? Or Bitcoin, or gold and silver, or paying down your debt, whatever it is you do, you start to realize there's like a reverse snowball going on. So when you pay off debt and you use the Dave Ramsey snowball method, you pay off the smallest debt first, and then you roll that onto the next debt, and then you roll that onto the next debt, and you pay the last debt off, which was the biggest one, faster than all the rest, assuming you have a bunch of different layers of debt in your life. In this way, what you're doing is each time you carve this little thing out, the amount of money you can use either for debt repayment to get out of it or investing in your future starts going up. It's just a little bit and it's incremental. Well, you do that across, you know, a working lifetime. And it's a drastically different retirement. It all started with a fucking egg. This seems like a little bit. And then, you know, Green Skull here saying once you do layers, the meat birds are next. It's right there. That was the next place that I was going, man. We're in sync. Yeah, you start saying, well, I could grow chickens for meat. You start doing a little research and you find out, yeah, your egg layers are okay, but, you know, there's certain breeds that are heritage that are better for meat production, or you can make your own pseudo, like it's a hybrid, but it's not like a Cornish cross. But if I take two large breed birds and I breed them together, the offspring are an F1 hybrid and they're going to grow a little faster and get a little bigger. And you start realizing, well, hell, you know, a Red Star layer is a large breed. All I need is like a Brahma rooster to put with them, and I'm going to get a pretty good meat bird out of it. And now you're doing that. And you just start thinking. Builder of Castle says, and then comes the Chickenator 3000. Yeah, something, right? It just opens everything up. You've started to define the edges. And that edge of the matrix, you know what that really is? That was the artificial fence they put around you. That's what it was. So it's real easy to see it when you're the orchestrator of the system. It's not as easy to see it when you're not the orchestrator of the system. So, for instance, I've got chain link fence all around my house, and my big, fat Jersey Giant chickens can't fly over it. They're contained in about a 2-acre area unless I let them out in the other acre out to the west. They're contained there. They're totally happy. They don't know. They grew up started out in a little cage. It was about 4 foot by 2 foot being tractored around. So when they were, because they had to be protected when they were little from hawks and everything else. And when they were let out of there, they're like, holy crap, this is a whole wilderness to us. They don't understand that they're actually prisoners. They're very well-treated prisoners. They actually have no desire to leave. If I open the gate to the front of the property and they go out, the only thing that can happen there is either they go out and come home or they go out on the road and get run over. And if they understood that, they wouldn't even think, they'd be like, I ain't going out there. Those big metal things are going to kill me. they're happy. If they really, 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 really wanted to get out, they could get over that fence. But in general, they just don't. That's their edge. If you're electronetting birds and you have a coop and you move them around and at night they go in the coop, you close it up and you fold up your netting and you move them to the next place and stake it out. So the next morning, all you do is open the door and they go in there. It's very clear to you what their limits and edge are. They just adapt to it. Once they touch that netting a time or two, like, I ain't doing this. This is where I live, and this is great. Look, he brings me food, and he brings me water, and he built me a house. That's the government to the chicken. And the chicken can't see it. You can't either until you start pushing the edges. Once that chicken gets out of that electronet, he's like, wait a minute. There's cool shit out there. I want to go out there. That's what happens to us. We are being treated like domesticated animals. That is what central planning is. We look at the human race as animals who are not smart enough to take care of themselves, and they need us, the benevolent overlords and oligarchs, to define the borders for them. And we need to be sneaky about how we do it so they don't see the edge of the matrix. That way they'll do what we say, and they won't question us. They'll be good little livestocks. When you start to keep livestock and you see its edges, and you realize there's an attempt to prevent you from doing something you have an inherent human right to do, provide your own food for yourself and your family, and to conduct commerce with people who legally want to engage in commerce with you, those borders show up like a bright light. You can see that edge so hard, and you say, you know what? I'm taking a freaking blowtorch to that shit. I'm not tolerating it anymore. Sure, I'm not going to be afraid to come into the area they want me in when I want something from there, but I'm going to get out whenever the hell I feel like it. Whenever it benefits me to not comply, I won't comply. You're now feral. You're not wild, right? You're not a chimp that's going to rip somebody's face off and throw your shit at somebody else. That's wild. You're feral. Meaning, I can coexist, but I also know what I am. That's what feral really is, when it comes to humans anyway. And then, we now have the perfect entry into the counter economy. You now own the ability to produce something that almost everybody you know uses at some level. And if you know 10 people, you probably only needed 2 to say yes. And most of you know more than 10 people. You only need 2 people that say, yeah, I'll buy your eggs. I'll buy a dozen a week from you. A lot of you with small flocks. Now, if you're a homesteader, you can have 20 birds, no problem or whatever. You can probably end up outproducing your ability to get rid of them, especially chickens' eggs, especially without marketing and being creative and all like we do here. Like we can sell chicken eggs. I don't want to. It's so much easier to sell duck eggs. We have our eggs sold before they come out of a duck's ass. Everything I'm saying today applies to the ducks as well, by the way, if you can handle the husbandry of ducks. It's a little bit different, and it's a little bit more expensive to get started if you don't know somebody with ducks that can give you eggs that you can hatch or you can buy them inexpensively. Ducks have gotten very expensive, especially sexed. And I'm going to tell you a little piece of advice here. Don't buy straight run from any supplier that also sells sexed birds. And if you're buying them in a store, who they're buying them from probably does sell sex birds. It is not that the hatcheries are trying to screw you over. But whenever anybody buys sexed birds, they almost inevitably buy all females or mostly females. Production, you end up about 50% each. So they check under the hood for all the girls, and they put them in the box for all the girls to be sold. And the males, they put all the males in the box for the males to be sold, to meet the order requirement for males, which is much lower, and they throw all the other males with the straight runs. So I have found a lot of times when people get straight runs and they'll get like 8 birds, they get like 6 roosters or 6 drakes. Just an extra piece of advice there. But since almost everybody eats eggs, it's a low-risk way to initiate informal trade with friends, family, and coworkers. And now you're doing real-world agorism. And this is something you need to understand, that every time you sell anything used or self-produced or flipped to to a friend, family, coworker, etc. for cash money, and it stays between you, them, and the fence post, you're there. You're that agorist. You're up here in the gray top part of the flag. That's what you're doing. You just went from agorism being an idea to being a practice that you're engaged in. It opens everything up for you. Packrat says, like any fertilized duck eggs you have are a value-added opportunity. It depends on what you're willing to do. We had a guy who wanted to buy all our eggs, pay a premium on them. He wanted them to be fertile, and it turned out he was doing the balut thing where they cook the chicken alive in the egg when they're almost ready to or the duck. I'm not doing it. You can do it. I don't want to stop it, but I'm not enabling it. Once I found out that's what he was going to do, I was like, no, you need to find somebody else to do that for. And again, the most powerful word in sales and marketing? No. He started off like upping his number per dozen. And I'm like, no, I just don't do this, man. In the end, what I want to say is, and you thought it was just an egg. You thought it was just an egg. Until it led you to question everything you thought you knew. And those questions led you to find answers you never thought of as even being possible. How many people really believe land of the free, home of the brave, baby? You ain't even free to keep a bird in your backyard about half the damn places where people live. You might be able to get away with it, but you're not free to do it. You're not free to do it. How free is a country when you're told you do not have a right to know what food you are putting in your body? That's literally been ruled on in courts of law in this country. No, you do not have a right to know everything in your food. If the law says it's a generally recognized a safe thing and it goes under this category that can have other shit in it, like natural flavors is one of them, you have no right to know. You have no right to decide what you do or do not put into your body, according to the court system. That's been a defense used and failed in many raw milk cases. Hey, look, why can't this person purchase raw milk? They know what it is. They know what the risks are. They're an adult. We let them engage in far riskier behavior like jumping out of airplanes for skydiving or riding motorcycles at 100 miles an hour or something else. Why can't they choose the food that puts in their body? And the legal response is because you don't have a right to that. You have an expectation to comply with the laws of your country and your jurisdiction. Land of the free? Really? Really? There are people that have had rabbits taken away from them. Now, if they had pet rabbits, it would be okay. There's actually not a prohibition on the rabbit itself. It's some blue hair finds out they're eating the rabbits. They ain't supposed to eat the rabbits. The rabbit is now livestock. Same animal. No limit on quantity. The function changes, the government interferes, land of the free. There is no, remember this old quote, right? No one is more enslaved than the man who falsely believes himself to be free. You thought it was just an egg. You thought it was just an egg. It was a red pill. It was a red pill. When Neo took the red pill, it didn't really change him. It just let him see what was always there. His name was Neo, which means new, which has its connotation in that the whole thing starts over and over again. But it has another, good art, good storytelling, good analogies have more than one way they can be interpreted. And so that new is not just that the person is the new warrior, the new one. It's that what they see is seen as new, even though it was always there. You thought it was just an egg. It was a red pill that gave you the key to expanding your freedom. And this is the weird thing. The only way you can actually expand your freedom is to first accept that you're not as free as you thought you were. All of that from an egg? I'll tell you what, I have seen it so many times in people that, yes, all that from just an egg. Well, here's another thing. We can produce more than half the feed a chicken needs. We can drive the cost of production to about 50 cents a dozen without being purists and doing 100% of our own. We can push it that down. There's plenty of neighbors who could handle something like running the black soldier fly bin in their yard, and you run the chickens in your yard, and then you just split the eggs. There's plenty of people that are gardeners, and they really just don't want the extra work of taking care of chickens, because is there any downside? Here's the downside. When I go on vacation, someone needs to take care of my chickens. Some people don't want that burden. So your neighbor that's a gardener and has does worm composting, what if you combined your efforts in composting and he gave you worms and he grows his garden and now you're just swapping? You're doing the eggs, he's helping feed your birds. You know what we could do? No shit, not exaggerating here. Pretty much destroy the concept of hunger in America. I'm not saying you're going to be really happy if you're living on eggs. What I'm saying is you can. And if we push food security into local backyards with eggs across the country, how many hungry people do you really think there's going to be? How many people wouldn't give a neighbor struggling a little bit a dozen eggs a week if they had two dozen eggs a week and only used one? How many would say, you know what, I don't need to sell them to Mark this week. My neighbor lost his job. Hey, man, here's a couple dozen eggs till you get back on your feet. How many people wouldn't do that? How many people would have to do it before we could drive the cost of eggs down and we would get less money for them, but even more goodwill? The egg is a revolution. The backyard chicken is a revolution. There's a reason that up until World War II, your own government encouraged you to do it. And then we went full mechanized. We went to war. We built giant metal machines that ran on tracks and killed people. We developed chemical capabilities and science capabilities in that endeavor. And when we came home, we industrialized everything. And then the people that were doing the industrialization looked at backyard food production and said, these people are dangerous. We need to get rid of them. But if we just tell them they can't do it, they'll rebel. They just fought a fucking war for freedom. They won't like it. So they slowly phased it out. And once people didn't have chickens in the backyard, they simply said, well, they'll mess everything up. They'll be noisy. They'll cause all kinds of problems. They'll get over your fence and they'll eat your dogs and cats and they'll get up on your roof and they'll shit down your chimney and you'll get killed with noxious gases or whatever bullshit they made up. And after a generation of that, people were like, I don't want a chicken around. To the point where I remember when I first started doing this podcast, there were people that were writing me and saying things like they would offer egg, like free eggs to neighbors, family, and friends, and they'd say stuff like, you eat the eggs right out of their butt? Karen, Margaret, where do you think your fucking eggs come from? They don't even know. It's so easy to deprive people of something when they don't know that they want it. That is the key to the matrix. And that's why the egg breaks it. The egg breaks the lock. You don't need the key anymore. Yeah, eggs come from a factory. No, eggs come from a bird. What came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken. No chicken, no egg. One way or another, each new form of animal that lays an egg had to first hatch from an egg, become that animal, and then laid the egg as the new species or the new morph of that species, I guess. I do know this. If you want to have freedom, the place to start is with food, and the place to start is in your own backyard. With that, I only have one question today, except, you know, maybe my one eye missed it. If you have any questions for me, I'm going to answer this one. Go ahead and ask them. When I get done with this question, I'll come back over to the live chat, and I'll see what's there. 229 Mick, my chickens have been laying less for a while. Then a fox got in and killed a few and beat up two of the five that remain. None of them have laid since about 2 months. Replace them or wait. I'd want to know how old they are, but let me give you a basic thing. 6 months of a baby chicken to an adult chicken, no eggs. That chicken will then erupt like a volcano after it lays its first few, and it will lay eggs right up until its first molt. When it molts, its egg production is going to go down. Okay, there's some other cycle in this, and I'll get to that in a second. It's going to go down. It's going to be about a six-week cycle, lay very few eggs during that molt. At some point during the molt, it won't lay any. It'll come out of that molt, and in that second cycle, it will lay almost as many eggs as the first cycle. If that chicken has laid, let's say, 250 eggs in those two cycles, that's 500 eggs, right? Not complicated math. A chicken is born with 1,000 ovum. It is now 50%. It's a battery at 50%. And when a battery, it takes less time for a battery to go from 50% to zero than it does from 100 to 50%. We all know that. We all experience it. Like, I got 50% power on my phone. But, like, you use it all day long, and it's still at 60 from 100, right? It's kind of the same thing in that the decline per year accelerates after 50%. This is why ducks are a superior egg-laying animal. A duck gives you 500 eggs. You know how many it has left? 1,000. They literally have a total capacity from the day they're born, females do, in eggs and mammals, right? You have a finite amount of eggs. And so if those birds are in their third cycle, even when they start laying again, they're not going to give you the production you had. So replace, you want to overlap replacement. When you know you're heading into that third cycle, if that's going to put you below the production you need to be 6 months prior to that molt with your new birds, which would be right about now. That's why we have freaking ducks right now. I have 25 baby ducks out in the living room right now because it's about to be 12 degrees tonight. So they can't be outside or even in the shop. So that's, I don't like to do them this time of year, but we didn't do them in the fall, so we kind of had to. So that's how to think about your replacement. You need that run-up. You need that six-month food debt, because if you just get rid of them and bring in babies, you're 6 months from any eggs. They probably will start laying again. There's other fluctuations in your production. One is light, day length. So your birds should start to pick up soon. Trauma will shut them down for a while, but not that long. They get over shit like that pretty quick. So I would check, are they getting enough protein? Are they getting enough exercise, et cetera? And you are in a natural low period. Your lowest low is usually like the beginning of January, though, when you're in those, like, you know, the shortest day of the year is the 21st of December, and the first day that it gets longer is the 25th. The sun dies on the cross, the Southern Cross in the sky, and it stays dead for 3 days and rises on the 25th, 1 degree. Never heard that before? Okay, that's a thing. And that's when they should start to pick up, but they don't really go crazy. Our birds about mid-February, right about now, that's when the real laying starts, and by March, they're going apeshit. And again, different breeds, et cetera, and you can mess with this, but I encourage you to be careful with it, and it's through lighting. If you provide lighting in the coop on a timer and you extend the light by about 2 hours, you can get them to give you more during the down period. The bad part is you're still taking from the chamber. When you empty the magazine, the gun's empty, right? So by getting more eggs in the first cycle, you're going to get less in the second, third, and succeeding cycles. You will speed up henopause, right? For lack of a better term. Let's see if any other questions came in. There's a bunch of comments, but I don't see any questions just yet. Only have chickens because of TSPC. Thanks. The new chickens are coming Thursday. Okay, I don't see any other questions. One person says Muscovy ducks are quiet. They are. They lay a lot of eggs. You get about 150 eggs from a Muscovy duck a year, but you get them all in about 6 months. That's the one thing to know about. You know, why don't I talk about things like geese? Because you get about 60 eggs over 60 days and none for the rest of the year. You know, like they're a very limited. Same with like turkeys, guineas, et cetera. They just don't have that frequency that we're looking for from backyard production. Question, Builder Pet, what about, do you have aquarium? I don't know what you're asking me. I have an aquarium, but I don't know what you're asking me. Anyway, if you want to clear that up, let me go ahead and talk about the item of the day today. the item of the day today is supposed to be on my desk, but it's not. So I'll have to bring it up on screen. I think I plugged it in. It is the Anker backup E7 26,800 milliamp hour backup portable charger. I love this thing. It is a beast, and it's on sale today. It's only like 9 or 10% off, but it is a discount. It is a discount, and it is totally worth buying. I've sold thousands of these. If you haven't noticed, what I've been doing the last 2 weeks, I've been running the top 10 items that's for total sales last year on T-Spaz. This one was the sixth best-selling product last year, and I've been selling it for about 6 years. And so I've sold thousands of these. I've never got a complaint, like I said, about Anker yesterday. That's because if there is a problem, and with electronics, you will occasionally have a bad one. Maybe one in 500 will have, like, be a lemon. They understand that. They just fix it. I have never had anybody tell me they had a problem with an Anker product and didn't get it fixed. I've had people say, well, I got one and it had this problem. I'm like, did you contact Anker before you came to me? Did you give them a chance to make it right? No, I'll do that now. And they'll come back like within a day and say, well, you know, you were right. I did a return and they just said, keep it. And they sent me a new one. That's what I'm looking for in a provider. Someone that's not never going to screw up. They're going to screw up. Everybody screws up. I want somebody that when they screw up, they own it and they fix it. That's what Anker does. This is a great product. Your cell phones and your devices are your lifeline of communications. I know a lot of people don't think they should be, but again, I'm a pragmatist. They are. They become our main way. We stay in touch. We get news. We communicate, et cetera. And a device like that, you can charge an iPhone with that thing about 9 times. That'll get you through most outages you'll ever be in, especially if you're smart enough to ration the use of your phone. It's just a fantastic product. Definitely check it out. Everything from Anker you can rely on, you can trust. So check that out. Again, the Anker 26,000 milliamp hour backup power pack. And the smaller one, that's no slouch, it's still 20,000 milliamp hours. It's on sale for like 33% off. Both of them are in the write-up. There's a link down there in the video notes. I do see a couple more comments and questions. And Ken Berry says, Jack deserves 10 times more followers. He's not smarter than me, but he's pretty damn smart. Thanks, Ken. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I would say I almost 20x the number of audio listens versus video plays over 48 hours once we put out a show. We've just never really built the presence on YouTube. I think some of that's throttling. I think some of it's just audience preference. Like I did this show from 2008 till about like 2018. Where YouTube was just like, oh, I'm doing this thing. I'll make a little video and put it on. Like, it was never the show. And so I built the audience up on audio only. And I think audio is an incredibly powerful marketing tool because it's the only form of media you can truly consume while focusing on something else. Like, you can't really read and drive a car safely anyway. You can't really read while you're doing your work in the office, you know, unless your work in the office is to sit there and answer the phone when it rings. Like if you actually have something to do other than stare at the screen and pretend you're working, Peter, I said, I got a pop culture for everything. If that is true of you, then you really can't read. You can't watch videos, et cetera, but you can listen to your headphones or have it playing at a reasonable volume. Right. And you can multitask with audio. And I think that is that podcast people in general, they tend to be people that multitask. I hear from people all the time. I listen to you while I'm at the gym on a treadmill or a Stairmaster, things like that. All right. So let's hit these other three comments and questions and then we'll wrap up a little bit earlier than usual, a little shorter show. I've been trying to get my shows back into this 1 hour, 15 minute range. Somehow they end up going 2 hours because I just, you know, if you have questions, if you guys want to talk, I want to be there for you. That's my job. New old man comment: in the past 5 months, I've made $1,000 selling chickens and fertilized eggs. Keep a rooster. It's worth it. I completely agree. I would tell you that if you want to be a small-scale producer in a place like Dallas-Fort Worth, you can do meat chickens. You can work your ass off for that meat chicken. You can process that meat chicken. And then you can go try to find somebody to buy that chicken for about $20. And you can make about $12 when it's all said and done with meat chickens. They use a lot more feed. And if you factor your labor in, you're probably making $5 a bird. So you do $100, 100 birds. You're lucky to sell them all. You make about $500 in real money. Okay, check this shit out. You can go out and hatch your own birds. So there's no entry cost at all. Because if you're selling meat birds, you almost have to be buying them. You almost have to be buying them. Like, they need to be Cornish crosses or Dixie rainbows or something like that. So you can just take a good laying breed with a rooster. You hatch babies. And if you use the right breed, then you can raise those birds by doing almost nothing, because if you have a broody hen, she does the work. You can raise them to about 12 to 14 months of age. You can advertise them on Marketplace, Craigslist, Nextdoor, etc. It's pullets about to lay. And if they're already laying, you get a little bit more. You can get between $15 and $25 a bird, and it's almost all profit. We've sold birds that were already laying that had laid a whole cycle. But we let them get through the molt, and we sold them on the other side of the molt. So, like, if you take this bird home today, it might have a day or two that it shuts down on you because it's stressed. But by this week, you'll have eggs coming out, $25. So we took it's like a used car salesman, right? You take the first cycle, which is the best cycle, sell your birds in the second cycle, you're hatching your own. And now you could sell those birds $20, $25 a bird. I bet right now you might get more. You might get more. Next one, Builder of Castle says, Jeff T. question. Jack, do you have an aquarium? I hear water running when I listen to you. I keep looking for a water leak. Yes, I have an aquarium. That's what you're asking. Yes, I have an aquarium. And right now, due to evaporation, the water level's a bit low. So the over-the-back filter, you're hearing that, and I'm conscious of it, and I just didn't have time to get it taken care of today. But, yes, that's fish tanks in the background. There's actually one, two, three live and two that are currently empty to be redone. I am an enthusiast with aquariums and tropical fish. T. Riverette says, I have successfully sold pullets at point of lay in the past. The trick is get your chicks in December, January, so they're ready by May, or hatch your own. I'm telling you guys, one of the reasons chickens are so popular, if I take fertilized duck eggs and I put them in an incubator, I put 30 of them in there, I'll probably get 20 baby ducks. If I put 30 chicken eggs in an incubator and I've done it, it is normal for me to get 30 chickens, to get 100% hatch. It's normal for that day. It's not every time, but if it's more than one that doesn't hatch, I'm kind of like, it's something wrong. My expectation is almost all of them will hatch. And so once you get into that, when you buy a baby chicken, I've been told some people are paying $6, $7 a bird right now for babies, for little chicks that are like 2 days old. And I mean, they are, you know, when you get babies that are that young, you can expect about a 3 to 5% mortality rate from a hatchery. That's my other thing. When I hatch my own birds, I almost never lose one. And if you do lose one, when they hatch and you put them in the brooder, you go, that one ain't going to make it. I mean, it's literally day one. You're like, that one probably ain't going to make it. And so you get a huge survival rate. You get a huge hatch rate. And you get a zero cost of chick. And that means you can time the birds to whenever you want to be them right at that, you know, ready to lay pullet stage. I think it's a good business model. Again, this is another one of those business models. I do not think you're even going to make a car payment with it, but I could be wrong depending on what your car payment is. What I do think is you can put a few thousand bucks a year in your pocket, and a few thousand bucks a year in your pocket, that's really great. And if you're advertising eggs for sale, and what I would do, and I've seen people do for eating or hatching, don't do that. Don't do that. That's like when you sell corn for food and you sell corn for seed, you get more money for your seed than for your food. It's the same shit. Put up two different ads. Fertilized hatching eggs. If you're selling your feed eggs for $5, it doesn't sell those for 12. And I would take the step of candling them and trying to determine that they are fertile. Or I would do this. This is the easier thing to do. We sell them for X dollars a dozen, give them 14 instead of 12. You know, call it a hatchery dozen or something like that. Because a couple extra eggs don't cost you really much of anything. And that way, if they get a couple that don't hatch, they don't care, right? I ordered my birds, my ducks this year from Cackle Hatchery. By the way, I love them. Sometimes I use Metzer. They're good, but they're in California. It's a lot further for the birds to travel, and I've had a lot more shipping problems living in Texas. Cackle's in Missouri, and they're pretty close to Memphis because they actually ship out of Memphis. They usually get here in one day. They're usually not in the mail for a full day, and they did this year. They sent me 25 birds. I've ordered 25. They sent me 30. Three of them died. Do you think I'm mad at them? I bought 25. I ended up with 27. They've been around about a week now. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be all right. You know, if something goes wrong now, it's my fault. Oh, Lion Den says Metzer has a farm in Tennessee, too. I guess that's new. I haven't bought birds in the mail for about 4 years now. So I'm just going to tell you guys, Cackle has better pricing, amazing service. They're great people. The only time I don't deal with Cackle is when I can't get what I want when I want it and I have to go somewhere else. Anyway, with that, appreciate everybody that showed up today. Tomorrow, guess who's going to be on with us? Chef Ken Daniels from the Expert Council will be on with us. We'll be talking about some really great stuff involving cooking tomorrow. Then Thursday, of course, is Expert Council. Friday will be Friday Flashback. And then next week, we'll do it all over again. We have truly returned to regularly scheduled programming, though there will be some interruptions. There will be some things that I'll be doing. I've got that big workshop coming up. I'm going up to Nicole's. By the way, Nicole told me for the Living Free in Tennessee workshop, they have 9 tickets left. 9 tickets left. You might want to check that out at Living Free in Tennessee, the workshop. I'm going to be there. If you want to meet me, and you haven't been able to get to one of my workshops because they're in the fall, scheduling conflicts, Texas is too far, whatever, and you want to come hang out with me and a bunch of other really cool people, get your ass to Tennessee. Go to Nicole's workshop. I'll be there. I'll be teaching on biochar and some other cool shit. So come on up. Let's do it. Let's hang out together. Let's break some bread. Let's have a beer. I'm going to try to get an article on my website out for her today about that. But I may not. Don't wait for that. Just go to livingfreeintennessee.com and click on the workshop and sign up and come on out there. And if you want to talk to me and learn about, you know, all this stuff and do it in a different way where we're actually face-to-face in a group setting, things like that, come on up there. I'll be there for the entire workshop. I'm flying in, I think, on a Thursday and flying out on a Sunday afternoon. And I think it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday is I don't remember. Whatever it is, I'll be there the day before, and I'm leaving the day after it's over. Take care, everyone. I'll catch you tomorrow with a great interview with Ken Daniels. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.